EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all having a good week. I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. And if you enjoy the show, please share it and leave a ratings and review wherever possible if you can, as it helps the show to be more discoverable to new listeners and future guests. Now, our first guest we have join us tonight is Ken from San Jose, California. Ken has very kindly called during his lunch break to share with us a UFO sighting in 1998 of a large and unusual shaped object moving silently overhead with no signs of propulsion. Then we head to the state of Michigan to speak with Ethan, and Ethan will be sharing a couple of paranormal experiences, one in his home state and another in Ghana, West Africa, while he was attending a traditional festival that involved a procession where participants would be possessed by the spirits of their ancestors. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Ken, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on today. And I know you're you're taking time out on your lunch break.
Yeah.
And you're calling from San Jose, California.
Yes.
Wonderful. Now, Ken, your UFO sighting occurred in 1998. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, Ken?
Sure. I remember it pretty well, just because it was such an amazing thing. It was November 18th. 1998, I was taking night classes at a community college called West Valley Community College. It's like in the Saratoga foothills, southwest of San Jose. And my class started at 6 and I got there about 5:45 and was standing outside in kind of like this small little quad area next to where the building, where the classrooms are at. And we just had a storm came through the day before, and then that day, like the final end of the storm, you know, some periodic showers and stuff, but you start getting the breaks in the clouds. And I made a phone call to a family member and was just talking to him about regular things, and I was looking up at the sky just enjoying the stars. I'm a big backpacker and outdoor person anyways. I always like looking up at the stars, and there was this gap in the clouds, and basically the gap was pretty much right above me, and there were some clouds to the north of me and clouds to the south of me, and I was facing north. And I just was looking up, and then just all of a sudden, I just saw something block out the stars. And I was able to get a good focus on it as it flew directly over my head. And I got a good view of it for about, 4 to 5 seconds, and it blocked out the stars really well. And I instantly knew it was, by its shape, it wasn't normal. The summer before, we had been backpacking in the Sierras, and we actually had a B-2 stealth bomber fly over us one night, and it did the same thing. It blocked out the stars, but you could really tell that delta shape, kind of saber-tooth pattern it has on the back wing. We instantly made it out. Plus, you could hear it. But as it flew over, one of my first things I thought of is like, I want to look for exhaust. I want to see if there's like some heat or if I hear anything. And I just did a 180 as it flew over my head, and it just was skimming the top of the clouds. And then it was gone. It went over the clouds. I kind of was like, oh, is it going to go through the cloud or something? But it just went over the clouds, and it was completely solid all the way around. It was completely dark, no lights or anything. And really the only way I was able to view it was just as it blocked out the stars. And there's still kind of like ambient light you get from the city lights, although where I was at, you don't get the San Jose city lights as much. But, just from the ambient light and reflection off the clouds, it kind of illuminated it a little bit. But yeah, it just blew me away when it flew over. And the only way I could describe it, the best way I describe it, is it would look like a bent bowling pin. And I know that sounds odd, but that's what it was. If you took a bowling pin and you bend it back maybe about 15 degrees at the thin neck part, that's how it was. And that's kind of the direction it was going. I think I sent you a drawing on this, but like the larger part was to my left, the smaller part was to my right. And then if you bend it back at that narrow area, that was the direction it was going. And, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. We have I'm under flight pattern for both San Francisco and San Jose. I see planes all the time, and I've tried my best to triangulate getting an estimated size of this. And I think conservatively, it was probably about 1,500 feet wide, but I think it might have even been bigger. There was a small plane about 2 minutes later that flew by. I could hear its engine. It was like a little single engine plane. A lot of them fly into Palo Alto Municipal Airport. And it was very tiny in comparison. And that's all it really was. It just, it was definitely a craft. If people will say, oh, was it, little green men? I'm like, I don't think it was little green men. I don't know. But we have a habit of, I'm an engineer, trained engineer. When we design planes and things, we kind of keep everything in like a delta shape pattern. And this didn't follow any sort of aerodynamic sort of sense. I think it could have probably flown any direction it wanted. If you were to just kind of triangulate or make that delta shape pattern, that was kind of how it was flying. But it was, like I said, the larger side was to the left, the smaller side was to the right. And that was it. And I reported it to the New Fork website. And for years, I've always gone back and looked through Peter Davenport. He's got a great page there. And I've just never, ever seen anybody describe what I've seen. And I've seen some people say, it's kind of boomerang shaped, but, this kind of is in that family, but, I'm looking for something that was as distinct as what I saw. And I think for the cloud height, I think the cloud height was probably maybe 6,000 to 8,000 feet, the top of the clouds. And I really think it was using the clouds to kind of as a cover, just the way that was my impression. I could be completely off, but that was kind of how it struck me. And it was flying where I was facing. I was definitely pretty much facing north. I've tried to look at it on a map as much as possible, or I'm looking a little more northwest. And, it might have just been coming up over the bay using San Francisco Bay or whatever. But and then where it continued going south, it takes you out over Santa Cruz and out over Monterey Bay. And that's it. That's pretty much what I saw.
That's interesting, Ken. It's good that you've had a B-2 flyover to kind of compare it to. And it is, yeah, it's a very unusual shape. In a way, it's completely imbalanced. Like you said, yes, about, you know, delta wings, you know, they have symmetrical, aren't they? But this one is very strange. So it would have been flying north to south.
Yes.
Lengthways.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, there was no sound, no lights. You know, it was really hard to, you know, to make any detail, like if, you know, if there were like panels that made it up or anything. I mean, it looked completely solid is one thing, but again, it was, I'm seeing the underside of it, you know, so it was, there was just wasn't enough space between the clouds for me to get a really good look at it. But I just how it blocked out the stars and the, just the kind of the radiant light we were getting a little bit from the clouds and everything, you know, as able to determine that shape, and it just was like, okay, that's bizarre. Yeah, so
I reckon there's probably people out there that have seen UFOs that are of a rather unorthodox shape, and I think they don't report them because they're completely different than what's, you know, commonly reported. But mm-hmm. UFOs, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, you saw this, so whatever this was is flying around. So, you know, if anyone's out there and they've seen anything remotely like this, you know, certainly get in contact. So I'm pretty sure it put Ken's mind at rest.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I've always been kind of a, you know, UFO enthusiast and, you know, I like space stuff and things like that. I worked in aerospace for a while you know, and never thought, you know, I would, you know, see a UFO. You know, there's always strange lights and stuff and you know, a lot of those can always be discounted, but you know what, you know, and I've seen some lights and things like that were doing things, and it's like, well, I don't know what it is, and I just go whatever. But this was definitely a craft. This was definitely a vehicle of some sorts.
Now, not necessarily the shape, but have you seen anything like this before or since?
No, nothing. And I'm like I said, I'm kind of a stargazer. I mean, even if I go outside, just if I'm barbecuing or something, I'll go up, I'll enjoy looking up at the stars. And like I said, I've seen some lights flying through the sky that look odd and stuff. And you can usually tell what are the satellites flying overhead and things like that. But, you know, I've seen a few other things, but, you know, you don't know what it is. You know, it could just be military or something as well. So
what you have there, Ken, is a very unique sighting.
Yeah, and especially in my area, you know, it's just, you know, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's like, really, was I the only person that saw that? That just kind of always like stumps me a little bit. And one more thing, Nick, another thing that's interesting, and I've always meant to write Peter Davenport about it, but when I've gone back to look at my sighting that I wrote on New Fork, and maybe it was something happened that just was accidental, but my sighting's not listed in his database anymore. And I'll remember sometimes like, oh, I want to write Mr. Davenport and ask him, you know, cause he could have been transferring stuff to a different server or something and it got lost, but you know, it could have just been completely, you know, the generic thing that happened. But yeah, I do find it kind of weird that my sighting's not on there anymore on the New Fork website.
Yeah, that is unusual. That is unusual. Like you said, it could have been, you know, just lost or transferred. And because I know he does have a lot of information on that website.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'll put the word out. I know a few people in California connected to MUFON. So I'll see if they've, you know, if they've had anything like that.
Okay.
Okay, Ken. Wonderful. Okay. I'll let you get on. I really appreciate you coming on, Ken, and sharing that.
I appreciate your time, Nick. And again, I'm sorry I made you jump through hoops to do this.
No, don't be silly. It's always worth it. It's always worth it, Ken. All right. You enjoy the rest of your day now.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Okay, take care, Ken. Bye. Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of high strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Ethan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nick. Thanks so much for having me on here.
You are more than welcome. And you're calling from the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. The one that looks like the mitten, surrounded by the lakes.
Up on the mitten. Okay. Now, Ethan, you have a couple of paranormal experiences to share with our listeners tonight. Would you like to start at the very first, please?
Sure. So, like I said, I'm from Michigan, born and raised here in the Grand Rapids area. So we're on the west side, so not Detroit. We're on the other side of the state from there. So, like I said, born and raised in this area. And, you know, Michigan's a very rural state, lots of forests. Going camping is a very big part of our culture here. I mean, my family's always done that for years and years, ever since I was a child. And so one of my first experience was down not too far from where I live, 45 minutes or so away, in the area called Gun Lake. I've been here many, many times. Like, we used to go camping here growing up. Like, pretty much as soon as school was out, we would go and camp there for a week. So this was, I think, when I was in high school is when this experience happened. I believe it was around 2010 or 2011. I don't remember exactly which summer it was, but we were camping there with a group of friends, and there's my family, so my two brothers and my parents, and then a couple of friends of other families that we're close friends with who have younger kids. And we were out there for like a week, and one of the nights, the day had been kind of a gloomier day. It rained quite a bit during the day, so it wasn't, you know, the best day for camping, but things kind of cleared up a little bit at night. We had a very weak campfire and, you know, went to bed. And I don't know exactly what time of night it was, so I didn't look at my watch or anything, but I woke up at some point during the night and I heard just this really, really strange sound. Really the best way I can describe it, it was like a flute music, but not, you know, like a, you know, like a metal, you know, concert flute they'd see in a symphony, like a very, you know, old fashioned, like wooden, like Native American kind of flute is the thing that came to me when I heard this. It was fairly loud. Like it wasn't faint. It was very distinct. Like I knew when I heard it that this is what I was hearing. And it was very eerie. Like just hearing it, even thinking back on it, it gives me goosebumps just thinking of it. And I was scared, but it was also just, what am I hearing? Like I said, I've been to this place many times. You know, I've never heard anything like this before, or I've not been back since, but I've never heard this before. And it just was very, very eerie. I have no idea what it was, but it didn't sound natural. It didn't sound like I don't think someone was playing the flute. It's only because of how loud it was. Like, I really think that something was going on spiritually, because it just made my skin crawl. And I just really just either wanted to go back to sleep or for the sound to stop. And everyone else in our trailer was asleep. No one else reacted, like woke up to it. I don't know if a dog heard it. I assume he would have, because, you know, his hearing is way better than a human. So I assume he probably heard it, but he didn't make any noise or anything. But eventually, like my mind's a little, I'm a little fuzzy exactly on if I fell back asleep first or if the sound stopped. I don't exactly remember what happened, but I just know at some point I must have fallen back to sleep, and then woke up the next morning, and, you know, everything was fine, and the sun was coming up. It was a beautiful, you know, summer day here in Michigan. And as we were having breakfast with everyone else, I brought it up. I'm like, hey, you know, I woke up last night, I heard this like flute music. It was really creepy. You know, did anyone else wake up last night and hear something like that? Or because I feel like I was actually awake. I don't think I was dreaming. And, you know, my brothers and my parents were like, oh, you probably were just dreaming. You know, I didn't hear anything last night. But one of the other guys that we were camping with was like, hey, yeah, I heard something last night. That's what I thought it was like a flute music. It was super eerie. So that's why I told him, like, well, if he heard it and I heard it, we couldn't have been having the same dream. So I think we did hear something, but I really don't have a lot of explanation for what it was that we heard. But I mean, that area, when I've looked into some of the history, it is, I mean, there are still Native American people, I believe from the Potawatomi Nation, that still live in the area. And there's actually a history of like battles between indigenous peoples and settlers in the area. I mean, the story goes that they fight between settlers and indigenous people there, and the indigenous people won, at least initially, and took the settlers' guns and threw them into the lake, which is where the name Gun Lake comes from. So just looking into that, I'm like, well, it could be a spirit of some kind. That's the only thing I could think of. But that was, so that's my first real experience with that one. And then for the second one, this was a little bit later. So I was in 2014. So this was when I was later, I was already in college, and I was, so my degree that I was studying for was in international development. So part of my program is I needed to be spending time in a developing country. So I went to Ghana in West Africa for several months, and with a small group of people from my college that I was at. And after we'd been there for a couple of months, our group got invited to go a little ways outside of Accra, the capital where the university we were at was, where we stayed. And we got to go a little ways out to a town, a little out, just outside the city, up on the ridge overlooking Accra, and go to attend this traditional festival called Ojira, which means purification in the local Cree language. So this is it's a traditional New Year's festival, and it's called, the name means purification, because the idea is, you know, you're purifying the town to get everything ready for the new year. And their traditional religion is very much about ancestors, like that, very spiritual in that way. It's a 4-day-long festival that we got to go and be there for and watch. And interesting thing with this festival is that the first two nights of this, there is a curfew, and that you have to be indoors when it gets dark. And because it's on the equator, it gets dark about 5 o'clock every day, and it gets dark at that time. But by the sun's going down, you're supposed to be indoors those first two nights, because once the sun goes down, the priests come out with the Ojira relic to purify the town, and they go throughout the town and do whatever they need to do. And according to the legends, is that if anyone sees this relic other than your priest or a priest initiate, the spirits will be angered, and they'll kidnap the person and take them into the spirit world, because during this festival, the spirit world and the physical world come very close, so it's very easy for the spirits to do things like that. So they might take pity on you, but we still can't guarantee that they would not do something to you if you don't follow the rules. So we all followed the rules diligently and stayed inside those first two nights. And the other two nights, they don't do that. There's no curfew. People are out in the streets partying, having a good time for much of the night. But so with that, so I believe it was like the second or third full day we were there. The really big part of this festival, that's like the main event, is that there are one woman from every one of the noble houses of the chiefs. For this whole group of people, because everyone comes to this town for the festival, because it's kind of a hub of this group of people. So one woman from every chieftain's house will bring food to the home of the ancestors on the edge of town, which is this big tree with a wall that's around it. But it is never referred to as a tree; it is the home of the ancestors. So this procession through the main part of town is the main part of the festival, and the story is that while she is carrying the offerings there, she is possessed by the spirits of the ancestors, and until she brings the food and the rest of the offerings to the ancestors' home, like, she will be possessed. Like, she has to make it all the way there before they will release her. And like my professor that was with us, he's gone many and done this many times, and he's talked about how sometimes you'll watch this and the women will have trouble walking. And people will basically be dragging them because they have to finish this procession. So we were out there, on that day watching this. And I knew we'd been told, the legends and things like that. And I was rather skeptical. I'm like, okay, that's just a story. That's not actually true. It's just, that's just the story that they are going with, And I'm watching this, I'm seeing them come by, and you know, the expressions on these women's faces as they're walking, it's kind of hard to describe, and I don't think I could mimic it either. It's just the most deadpan, like expressionless face I've ever seen. I've never seen anyone make that kind of expression before and be able to hold it for such a long period of time. It's not just like a short little route. It's a good half hour at least, especially because they're walking very slowly. So it can take a long time to finish this. And like, and I've not, have experience with acting and things like that myself, and I would not be able to hold that expression for a very long period of time. So that was my first indication that maybe something was going on. And again, like my professor had told us too, like a lot of them had trouble walking. And even if they weren't having trouble, it was almost like a zombie-like trance. You know, it wasn't just a normal walking pace. It was very rigid and very, you know, just not a way someone would normally walk. I mean, they're carrying it on their heads for the most part, because that's, you know, just very normal for anything in West Africa. But even I've seen people carrying stuff on their heads and walking quite quickly, just in everyday life there. And that's not how they were walking. It was, you know, it was just something just was not right. It seemed like they were in some kind of a trance. And at one point where I was, you know, observing this, one of the women walked past me. And as she was, you know, as she walked past me, I felt almost like this wind or like some kind of a force. I feel like a wind is a good way to describe it, but not like, you know, there was no wind that day. It was, you know, it was calm and very hot and humid like most days in Ghana. So there was no breeze at the moment, but it felt like I felt something kind of like a wind just rush past me. And as it did that, like I could feel it physically move me. Like it was like someone had, you know, come up to me and physically shoved me to the side. And I moved maybe a foot or so. It was a substantial movement. It wasn't just like I, you know, I stumbled. Like it was, I was substantially moved, and it's malevolent. You know, I didn't feel any kind of malevolence from that force or wind or whatever it was, but something was definitely there. And like right at, like I felt it, it, you know, it shifted me over about a foot or so. And I kind of looked around. I'm like, did somebody push me? Did someone knock into me? Like there's no one that close to me. I mean, there's a bunch of us standing here watching this, but no one's close enough. I don't think that they would have done that. I looked at the person next to me who was from the direction that I felt the movement. And I was like, hey, did you just like push me? Like, sorry, like when I got too close or something? And like, no, I've been standing right here. What are you talking about? I didn't push you. What do you mean? I'm like, well, something just pushed me. Like, I swear, something just moved me a foot over. And like, nah, that's okay, whatever. Like, maybe the heat's just getting to you. But I definitely felt something. And just kind of the whole rest of that procession, I just kind of was very aware of what was going on. I don't really have a good explanation for it. Like, I do really think it was one of those ancestral spirits. It's kind of, and I do wonder if it was partially because I was doubting what I had been told, and if the spirit was just like, hey, wake up, like we're here, this, you know, this is happening, you need to open yourself up. I don't know if it relates or not, but earlier that day we had gone and observed the prayers in one of these houses, and part of that, these prayers involved a goat sacrifice, which we did not realize was going to happen. So that was exciting to say the least. And a big thing in their religion, when you're praying, is pouring libations. So using alcohol and you pour it out as a gift. And part of when you're doing these prayers in a large group like we were for that, they have everyone who's there has to participate in the libations. It's not just the priest, like everyone has to be a part of this. So we were all given a small glass, like kind of like a shot glass or so, and you take a sip and then you pour the rest out. as your prayer, basically. And so I had done that. And then right after that was the goat was sacrificed. And because we were kind of a guest of honor, our group was, they had put us right front and center of while the prayers were happening. So I ended up getting some goat's blood on my shoes from that. And I was still wearing them, you know, the same shoes when we were at the procession. So I don't know if maybe be part of that, if, you know, attracted that particular spirit to me, like, oh, he's got the blood on him. I'm going to go and check this out and see who this person is. I've never seen, like, I don't recognize this person. You know, I don't know if it was something like that or if it was more, they're just trying to, you know, raise my awareness and be like, hey, you know, there are things going on here that you can't see, but you really need to be open to this. You should, like, you shouldn't be doubting what you're seeing. Like, just because you can't explain it doesn't mean it's not happening or that we're not here. So it's kind of, and even that night when we were eating dinner, I asked other people, I'm like, did any, you know, I felt something, you know, physically move me during the procession, like almost like a wind or something like that. But there was, there was no wind today, at least not at that time. And like, I know I'm a small guy, but it wasn't enough. Even if there was a breeze, it wasn't enough that would have moved me that much. It wasn't like a strong, the little bit of breeze we may have had wasn't like that. So did anyone else feel anything? And no one had felt anything or noticed anything else, you know, like I had, or was it, had that kind of spiritual awareness that I had the rest of the procession for that day. And it was, they all kind of told me I was crazy or that I, you know, was that I'd listened to the story, you know, too much and was just overthinking it, or that I was dehydrated, so I was just, you know, making things up, or, you know, things like that. Like, people really didn't believe me. And I kind of had that really with both of my stories. That's just kind of been a thing that I've noticed, is that when I tell people these, you know, two stories, people are like, oh, okay, maybe that happened, but not really, not really believing. I mean, the area that I live in, like, West Michigan is a very religious area. It's a very Dutch area. Most of us are Dutch by heritage, which means we're Calvinist, you know, Christians. They're very, very conservative. Like, so a lot of things like that, it just isn't really in our culture. Like, people are like, those things just don't happen. Or you don't talk about those kind of things. It's kind of the culture around here. So that's why I've noticed when I have told people my story, they're like, okay, yeah, whatever. But they just kind of, you know, push it off to the side. But I'm like, I know what I heard that first time. I know what I felt this other time. Like, there's, you know, I really think there is something going on, you know, that we can't see in this, you know, other world, in the spiritual realm. And, you know, ever since, I was like, it's really kind of changed my perspective, and it's coming me up. I've helped me be more open-minded and say, like, well, you know, I think there's just things that we just can't necessarily explain. And, you know, it just really opens me up a lot more to those kind of things, which is how I kind of got into listening to your podcast and just learning, like, other people's stories. And so I really appreciate, you know, you doing what you do, because it's nice having someone I can, you know, tell my experiences to and know that you're not going to tell me I was crazy and that, you know, you actually, you know, will believe that, you know, I know what I experienced and, you know, things like that. Yeah, so I mean, that's basically it. That's just those are the only two, and they've been pretty, you know, far between. And I really haven't had any other noticeable experiences since then. I do enjoy, like, watching the stars. So I hope that maybe I'll see something if I keep watching, but haven't seen anything just yet. So yeah, that's really the long and short of it.
That is sure is interesting, Ethan. And I also have a diagnosis for you, and you're not crazy.
That's good to hear.
It's official. Well, that sure is interesting. You know, I think even if you don't believe in this kind of stuff, you know, at these traditional festivals, these spiritual festivals, you know, they've been doing it for a long, long time. You know, I've been to a very similar festival like this in Southeast Asia. And even if you don't believe in it, you know, these go on. They've gone on for a long, long time. You know, so it could just be that maybe, you know, like you said about the blood, or you maybe just got too close and some of the ancestors were passing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do, it just kind of makes me wonder, because I mean, you know, we when we were there, I mean, obviously most of we're pretty much all white. So we, you know, we stand out like a sore thumb in the crowd there. So I do just kind of wonder if the, if one of the ancestors was like, okay, you know, I don't like you white people and the way you treated us in the past. I'm just going to give you a little scare here.
Maybe. How did it feel? Did it feel cold or anything like that? And what kind of force was it? It actually said you, it moved you.
Yeah, it didn't really feel cold. It was almost like, I feel like it was almost like a warm wind-like force. So, and it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, in, like some people in their, you know, paranormal experiences, they feel like, you know, a hard, you know, cold hand or, you know, something like grabbing them. And it wasn't so much like it grabbed me. It was just like, it's like, you know, someone had like walked up to me and shoved me basically, but it was kind of like a warm, it was almost a slightly warm feeling actually. And like I said, like it really didn't feel malevolent whatsoever. It just some kind of force or something that just like shoved me.
You know, you're saying about they were actually in a trance in these festivals, you mm-hmm. know, they get into these trances and they have the music going, you know, the beat of the drum, and that all kind of makes you more connected. You know, it puts you on a level, same as like in when mm-hmm. when monks meditate, and it can make you more sensitive to things. So it could just be that, you know, you're there and you experienced exactly what was going on. You know, they were giving offerings to the ancestors. You know, the ancestors were there. You know, they were active, joining in.
Yeah, I do think that's very possible, because there is a lot of like music and things like that going on during this procession. It's very involved, and it's kind of hard to describe if you haven't experienced that. I guess is one thing I've kind of tried to tell people too, is because it's a very different culture from, you know, coming from like a Western Judeo-Christian culture. It's something that's so different from what we're used to. But it was a very, very interesting experience. And I do feel like the rest of the time we were there, I felt like I tried to stay very open to what was going on around me on a different plane of existence.
I must admit, I like getting involved in those kind of ceremonies. I mean, my wife's from Asia, and we've been involved in a lot of spiritual, because it's very much the same over in Thailand, where it's 50-50, mm-hmm. at 50% living and 50% dead. I mean, they take the dead very seriously, the ancestors, you know, the past very, very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to a few, you know, very different types of ceremony. I've been to a couple of very dark ones as well. I enjoy the connection. It's very odd. And so going to some temples, you know, where have the Thai monks would be chanting, and you listen, and it puts you in a state. It really does put you into a serious state where it just makes you more susceptible, and it's very unusual. It is hard to explain to people.
Yeah, and I do like that we got to go to the prayers as well before that, because I think that was a really interesting to help get us into that state, I think, with, even though, you know, we couldn't really understand what the priest was saying because he was speaking in Sri, and even though we did learn a little bit of the language while we were there, but we didn't, not enough to really understand what he was saying because he was speaking so quickly and so passionately. But I did notice that doing those libations, I do remember, because I said the alcohol they were using was schnapps, which we did all question, like, well, why are you using this? This is from Europe. This isn't from Ghana. Like, why do the spirits want this if they never had this for the thousands of years before you encountered this liquor? But anyways, that was interesting. But I'd never had that kind of liquor before, but it just burned. And I do wonder if that was part of the point, was just to really, you know, get you into a different mindset. And now that I'm talking about it, I actually feel like I kind of had another experience while I was there that I just remembered, if you don't mind me.
You go right on ahead.
Okay. This is real quick, but so we did a lot of traveling while we were there, and to visit many different places around the country and get to know different things about the culture. And since we were, you know, focused on development, we did a lot of working with organizations that were there and things like that. So one of the places that we went towards the end of our time there, we were there from like August until early December. So this is probably early November. Yeah, probably around early or late November, so close to a little earlier than now, probably. We went in the middle part of the country to the the city of Kumasi, which is the capital of the Ashanti Kingdom, which is the largest ethnic group in the country. And they actually were a holdout when the British colonized the country. There was a brief war between them and the British and things like that. And they still have their king and things like that. It's a very interesting city to visit because of there's so much tradition and things like that. It's a real cool old city and things. But so where we stayed when we were visiting that city was in this little hotel on the outskirts of the city, right by this really big lake that's right there. And the interesting thing also with that lake is that the Ashanti people have a great reverence for this location, because it's said to be a place where a lot of spirits dwell in that lake. So they're very reverent of it. So much so that for fishermen, you'll watch them go out to fish on the lake, but the boats that they use, it's kind of like a dugout canoe sort of a thing, because it's a very forested area in that part of Ghana. But they do not use any kind of oar or paddle. They use their hands to move themselves because apparently the spirits find the sound of paddles very disturbing. So they don't. At one point they told someone this and they related it to the other people. So for centuries, this is how they've done it. They paddle out on the lake, just their hands. It's very interesting to watch. And I remember when we were there, there was a big storm that came through, which also we were told was unnatural, because we were there during the dry season. So it wasn't supposed to be raining. So that in itself was very interesting, because this was not supposed to be happening. But I woke up early, probably around sunrise, I think, that next morning. So it was very dark and very, very foggy. And, we were going to have, breakfast out. I'll just get up. I've got to be up in like an hour. I'll just get dressed and I'll walk down to the beach, and just mentally prepare myself for the day and just kind of take a little quiet time to myself. So I got up, I walked down and there's like some nice benches and a bunch of hammocks actually. I'm right on the beach where this little hotel was. So I sat down and just when you're just kind of looking out the water. And normally from sitting there, you could look out across and see the other side of the lake and the hills that ring it. But because of the fog, I couldn't see anything, but I could hear something. It's kind of hard to describe. It was like a sloshing sound, like something was moving in the water, but it was way too dark. It was still too dark out, so I don't think any of the fishermen would have been out, but I definitely, I think with the wind, it's kind of stirring the fog. I felt like I kind of saw something like a shadow. Moving in the fog. And even thinking about it now, it kind of gives me chills. I'd forgotten about that, but it was just like there, 1 minute gone the next, it was just like, did I actually see something or is that just, the fog playing tricks on my eyes? Like, I really don't, it was hard to even see what it was. It was just kind of a shadow, but it was kind of human, like human shaped, maybe a little bigger than a human, but definitely very humanoid looking. But it was out like far enough that I'm like, it looked like it was walking or maybe even on top of the water. I'm not quite sure, but it was like quite a ways out. Like especially with the fog, it was hard to see anywhere, but that was probably the furthest out I could see. And yeah, it was kind of creepy, but so I that one I actually didn't tell anybody about. I don't think I've ever actually told anyone about that. I'd really forgotten about that until just now. All of a sudden, it popped back into my head. I really don't know what that was, but that's one thing I think it might have been one of the lake spirits that we'd been told about. It's the only thing that would make sense to me, really.
It could be the reason why the villagers don't go fishing at night.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, it was early morning, but probably around dawn or just after dawn. Like, everyone wakes up very early there because as soon as the sun comes up, it gets hot. So people generally get up like right at dawn so you can get some stuff done before the sun comes up, but it was probably just about dawn. So it wasn't, so people were probably starting to get up, but yeah, I do wonder if that's why they don't go out like at night. I mean, and the area where we were, cause we were outside the city, so there was very little light. I mean, there's a couple lights along like the path to like our rooms, but there's not a lot of light out there. So, it was very dark and it was it was hard to see, but I feel like I did see something. I mean, it very well could have just been, you know, the fog playing tricks on me. I mean, that's very possible too, but I definitely heard some sounds coming from the water as well. So I'm very curious of, it wasn't coming towards me or anything like that. It was kind of like walking. I'm looking straight at the lake and it was moving like across my field of vision.
Certainly some interesting experiences in Ghana.
Yeah, very interesting. So it really kind of opened me up to that kind of just looking at, you know, for things beyond the, you know, what we can see or understand.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, there's a lot out there. And from one lake, going back to Gun Lake now, you know, mm-hmm. there's obviously a lot of history around that area. You know, like you were saying about the battles being fought and stuff and the bodies that were probably popped into the lake.
Yeah.
And I think also that Al Capone, I think he used a holiday up in Gun Lake.
Very possible. It's not that far from Chicago.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Gun Lake he used to go up and stay on. I think Chicago Point, is that? Yeah, I think it's pretty sure it's Gun Lake.
I'm pretty sure that is on Gun Lake. It's a fairly large lake. I do think that there's an area called Chicago Point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Al Capone and his boys used to stay up there. And you know, if anywhere Al Capone used to be, you know, there could well be more bodies floating around.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
So you never know, but interesting flutes. And also someone else heard the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm like, we must have heard something, because there's no way we could have been having the same dream at the exact same time, you know? So we definitely heard something.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually very interesting. I was going to say, so over in that area, like there's a lot of hiking trails and mountain biking trails and things like that in the around Gun Lake, because lots of people go there, you know, for camping and vacation and things like that. And there's one trail we've hiked many, many times. It's actually called the Devil's Soup Bowl trail, because it leads to this big, like, indentation in the land, kind of a big indentation, I guess, is the easiest way to describe it. So it's been nicknamed the Devil's Soup Bowl. So I've never been there at night. I really don't want to with a name like that.
Yeah, I mean, we have very similar place names in England, and I think it's the same for Europe. Usually when it's named after the devil, it's for a particular reason, because the area has an effect, or there's things going on there, or, you know, the locals would name them devils, whatever. We have a devil's chimney near us. So anywhere there's a place called the devil, then there's usually something about the place, which is probably best to avoid in some cases, especially if you're hiking on your own. Yeah, Devil's Soup Bowl.
Yeah, I haven't looked to see what the, if there's any, you know, history with that, with the name for that area or anything, but I would think there might be something if that's the name that, you know, was given.
Probably you don't want to go on the trail on your own or anything. You never know what could be up there.
Yeah, I haven't been back to that area since event happened, but I don't know. I have been back once, but that was just during the day. I haven't spent the night down there since that happened, and I'm not totally sure if I really want to, honestly. It really spooked me.
And of course, now you're more of a believer than you were before.
Yeah, very much so.
It's all good. Welcome to the club.
Thanks. I like being able to, you know, tell that to people. And yeah, I don't know if anyone's ever experienced anything like that, you know, with Gun Lake, or even if they weren't in Ghana, I'd be interested to know if anyone's ever had experiences like that, you know, similar to that. And I thought that was interesting that I remembered something that I'd never told anybody while I was talking to you. That was a very interesting moment.
That's very interesting. Yeah, to our listeners, you know, if you stayed up on Gun Lake in Michigan, you have any experiences up there, let us know. It'd be interesting if anyone else has heard the, you know, the strange flute sounds.
Yeah, I'd really be interested to know if anyone else besides the two of us had heard that. Interested to know if that's a recurring thing that, you know, like I said, I've been there many times and never heard that before, so I don't know. Maybe I was just very lucky that night or something.
Maybe you should go back up there.
Maybe. And see if it happens again.
You never know. You never know.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on, Ethan, sharing that for our listeners. Interesting stuff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on here. Yeah, that was really fun, actually. You're so easy to talk to.
It is. That's what it's about. You know, this is why I created the show. It's just because it's nice and relaxed, and people hear you and hear how you are relaxed, and then they go, oh, I want to do this, you know, and people come on for the same reason. So, you know, it's great. It is really great. Plus, I get to meet people from all over the world. So,
yeah, that's really cool.
Great stuff. All right, then. Well, you enjoy the rest of your day, okay? And thank you for being a listener.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, no worries. You enjoy the rest of your day, Ethan. All right.
You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care, brother. That is all for today. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Ken and Ethan for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.
Paranormal Talk Radio, you'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.